because the desire of Mordechai not to kneel and not to bow, because anything outside of anything directly removed from the service of Hashem is a foreign worship. Would seem to negate not only fulfilling the desire of Haman in practice, but the ganze zugang as mit avsich rechnen mit menhage shalel. It would seem Mordechai's approach would totally negate the whole attitude, the whole approach that you have to deal with the world. Idach, ey, berechnet sich damit, was der Eberstadt geschickt in den Gold, staff down und nachher sein, der in Hange, kürz in Hange. Abgemassen, leid in Hange, schell in, wo es steht, nicht zu teilen mit. On the other hand, if we are going to take into consideration, we are going to deal with the fact that Eberstadt did put us in exile, and therefore impose certain limitations on us, then we have no choice but to conduct ourselves according to Haman's desire, which is that we function within those limitations. Avol pigen is der chiddush, as b'shas mitzvah mit den Eberstein wir steht hergefahren haben, so ilm hat ein Begehrt, zum Begaben sein hof. Still in all, the chiddush is that when one is connected to the Eberstein, as he stands higher than the normal order of the world, the normal way of conducting worldly affairs, we have the power to unite, to connect two opposites. Zayndik in Elam un in Golos, so zayn lo yichra v'lo yishtach. Shtayndik in Gantzen hacha darfum. While at the same time, while the person is standing in the world and in exile, it should be in a way of not kneeling and not bowing, that he should stand entirely above it all. Al pizah v'etim fashtayn divrei ha-medrash. Based on this, we can understand the words of the medrash. Die zwei Pirushen im Medrash geben ein Recht, zwei Zugänge von der Eden in seiner Wede bis Managol. The two explanations in the Medrash bring out two approaches that a Jew could have to his service in the time of Golos. Bald ist der Eberstadt geschickt der Eden in Elam Hazi, und dort in Gufu in Golos, unter der Schlitte von Melech HaChashverosh. Since the Eberstadt sent a Jew into this world and within the world itself into exile, under the rulership of King HaChashverosh, und sie sagt, Dinen Tera, als Dinen der Malchus der Dinen, and Torah itself says that the law is that you have to follow the laws of the country that you're in. Kenu l'chere menin kutzen haman, as binyone ye'elam, nit binyone v'zayin v'abundin mit Torah mitzvahs, is nit shayich, as v'asachah zon zayin tzei hofchim v'n tzein ish v'yish, rotzim mo'ad chay v'haman. That you would think, as Haman wants you to think, that when it comes to worldly matters, you know, it's matters which don't directly affect Torah mitzvahs, it's not possible at the same time to incorporate the two opposites, the desires of Mordechai and the desires of Haman. As zusammen damit was Avdei HaShverosh an Anen Golos, so bei ihm sein Anhoge von Leichra v'le Yishtach v'zu Anhoge Seil. That together with the fact that we are the servants of HaShverosh in Golos, that the person should conduct himself in a manner of not kneeling and not bowing to worldly affairs, to the normal, natural order of things. But I'm eins von die Beide. Because you could only have one of the two. Eben der Eberstadt geschickt in den Golos, heißt es doch, as mis etwas bei Grenz, man hages hat er noch gut gern mit ihnen gezehn haben. If the Eberstadt sent Jews into exile, it means that we're somewhat confined and limited by the order of nature and the rules of the country that we're in, which is Haman's position. Und eben mir gefällt sich nicht in Golos, was damals fühlten sich gezehn mal drin. If, on the other hand, we're not in Golos, and we can conduct ourselves according to Mordechai's desire, maybe from Le'icha v'Le'ishtacha, in a way of not kneeling and not bowing, is not going to try to say, as is Dorotz and Haman. In that case, it's not possible to say that there's room for Haman's position. So it's either one or two. Again, it's the Chiyum, as I had became a Tenim, and Salpi Shulchan Aruch is moving up Poshet, as Eivdem is Kena, 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 Balabayis, the Tefayit, and Afil, was Man of Golos. When it comes to the obligation that a Jew has in fulfilling Torah mitzvahs according to Shulchan Aruch, it's understood and obvious that on this no one has the power over a Jew, even in time of exile. When it comes to permitted things, worldly affairs, which are your actions and your ways, we can say as those who feel inside can say, I'm happy and I'm going to say, 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 how is it possible that he should, in these worldly affairs, conduct himself, say, according to the desire of Haman, that he should follow the rules of nature and conduct himself in the manner normal way that the world conducts itself. And if not, it, he's called that he transgresses the command of the king. And how could at the same time fulfill the desire of Mordechai, who did not bow, kneel, and did not bow? Zagdim. As we met, varim murim asidah stirat svishin ratzin ish v'ish, v'nisretzik b'nei ksh'be'elam. When are we talking about that there's a conflict between the desires of one person and another when you're talking about in worldly in the way the world normally conducts itself? When you're talking about the Eivish as he transcends the order of nature, it's possible that you could accomplish both things. It's possible that a Jew should find himself in the world and in exile as the servant of Ahasuerus, which is standing God's in Hechav HaKolon and Eilim Vagolus, the Yichur Leishach, at the same time, stand transcend, and stand entirely higher from worldly matters. As it says, he shall not kneel, he did not bow. Bizaz Ezel Peilim Ich, if the Melech from Umas Eilim was a Sheil Dibadam, to the point that he impacts not only that not only does he not let the rules of nature rule over him, but he actually transforms the rules of nature. Not only does he not allow the rules of the Gentile king, like in the case of Mordechai and Ahasuerus, govern his behavior when it comes to issues of Avodas Hashem. If anything, he ends up impacting on that king, that he changes his position, what rules over him.
So what's the causality there? Why should his higher level actually affect that someone else should be changed?
Because again, when you transcend the rules of nature, it means you are higher than nature, and therefore you have the capacity to transform nature. When you rule nature, okay, if either nature rules you or you rule it.
Being above nature is actually ruling nature?
Sure. That means I'm in the same world that nature, I'm in the world of nature, and I rise above nature. That means nature doesn't dictate to me, I dictate to nature. If by rising above nature I leave the world, then you're right, I'm not ruling the world, I'm gone, poof.
Right.
When you're talking about the concept that I can function within the world, be a part of the world, and yet at the same time be above the rules of nature, then I am not just being above the rules of nature, but I am ruling nature.
You're like creating a new nature in a sense.
And thus it appears in Stimus Lashon HaGemara Lassi Yitzei Nisho Ish, Lassi Yitzei Mordechai V'Homo. And the Gemara is the Snit Mevat. And that is the explanation of Pnimius and Yonim of the fact that the Gemara just says it plain. But what did Ahasuerus attempt to do? Fulfill the desires of Haman and the desires of Mordechai. And the Gemara doesn't to say anything which would undermine that, which would cancel that out in any way. Am durch da was mal hier die stand mit dem ganzen bitte zu dem Hebsch. Ich will ihr stark mit Käfer bei mir das oder because through the fact that Mordechai Yehud stood with the total bitte to the Hebsch, the total self-nullification to the Hebsch. He did not kneel, he did not bow. He denied all false observances, false services. Hat das einfach been mit dem Teke von dem Hebsch, so mein Mann, how you say, long. So this bound him up and connected him with the power of the Eivishta that transcends the order of the world. That gives him the tremendous power that while in exile, in the Persian exile, under the king Ahasuerus, he should still see the fulfillment in its entirety of his not kneeling and not bowing, to the point that this itself brought about the downfall of Haman, the nullifying of the Gzera of Haman, and the elevation of Mordechai to the point that he became second to the king. And thus, he thought that Eivish would say for now, Eden. Das geht auf der Eivische Luzerne von Eiden, als er viele gefühlen durch sich im Galus hatte, die Brede sich zu fühlen, die Zähne ist, weil er ist. And this is what the Eivische gives, puts up to the will and desire of each person. That being in Galus, he has the choice, he can conduct himself if he wants, Kitzen Israel, she has the capacity, God gives it up to each person to decide what he wants to do. And one of the choices he has is to fulfill the desires of both Haman and Mordechai. In order to transcend the limitations of the natural order. As a statement that take if not a vifels is muchos to mechanics and telemits to prepare. Aber in alle anderen Jahren filtert, wie es untergeworfen der Gold, hat er von Hagisch Leilung, wo er wieder ist, oder wo ich, geht sein Hamel nach Mann und so. He has a choice, if he wants, he could this, in this area, he doesn't have a choice. Everyone has to be steadfast when it comes to Teremitzes. That's not a real choice. Even though, we're not talking about Bechira here, Bechira, I mean, the choice, the Avish is really not giving you a real choice. The Avish is commanding you that you have to be steadfast when it comes to Teremitzes. When we're saying that you have the choice, the last concern is Rish, we mean you could go about it in two ways. One is to be steadfast and only as much as it's necessary to fulfill the Torah and the mitzvahs. But in all other manners, he feels like he goes along with the limitations of nature in the normal way that the world conducts itself. So he does, you know, what he's obligated to do, he does. But in all other areas, he conducts himself like the world. Which, as we explained, is an avodah shezara lei, is a service that's foreign to him. Others also feel concerned about that.
Foreign to
what?
To him.
A service which is foreign to him.
Him with a capital H.
No.
Him
to himself.
Foreign to the yid.
Others also feeling concerned about it, as in all the other states, the Hecha for Elam and for Golos, Zayne for Bunim with the Meirushin, and the Rivers by Him Leichra, Le Yishtach, Le Chol, and Yonam, and Zayne with Avedis Hashem. Or he can conduct himself according to the will of Mordechai, that in all of his affairs, he stands entirely above the world, and above exile, being connected to the Eivishta, and therefore by him he does not kneel, he does not bow to anything, which is not Avedis Hashem. Anything which is not Avedis Hashem has no effect on him whatsoever, and he in no way lowers himself to it or deals with it. Ein adava tolle, ella birtzene. And this choice, how you choose to conduct your life, do you just remain loyal when it comes to Torah mitzvahs, when it comes to all other fears? You know, you have your own life, and you do things, you know, the way you know, you have to deal with the natural order of things, and the world has a way of doing things in certain ways, and you have to. Or does he stand totally, completely above all worldly matters and all worldly affairs, and all he knows is Avedis Hashem? And this, the Rebbe says, is given over to the choice of a Jew. Every Jew has this choice to make in his own personal life. And then is over the Achilik Sushin the Datus. However, in this, there is a distinction to be made between different generations. Now, right away, you would assume that if the Rebbe is making a distinction between different generations, what he means is that in earlier generations, where people were on a much higher spiritual level, so they could lift themselves up above all worldly affairs and not be affected by any rules of nature or the like. But in later generations, where people are on a lower spiritual level, so they're more bound by the limitations of nature. That's what you would think. If you wanted to make a distinction between one generation and the next, you would think wrong if that is what you would think, because the Rebbe says the distinction between the generations is as bereg that there is anyone come back balls from achutz zeh es amal chazuki yitz baze vel chav nit zugelost as it yitzol ken zuch stam in ganz in hacha fagos. And in most generations, there were other external limitations. It's true that the person may have on his own been, it wasn't really completely a person's free choice. Because it's true that a person might choose to rise up above his own personal limitations, but he still had to deal with extra external limitations. There were decrees by the kingdoms. The guy made certain decrees against the Jews. There were certain things which even if you might go past your own personal limitations, you didn't necessarily, you still had to deal with the fact that there was a hostile world which was imposing additional limitations on you, which made it that much more difficult. Okay? However, in our generation, is the Stoli Norbert Senek for Na'idin Kidlakam. But in this generation, whether you want to go along with the world and conduct yourself and behave yourself and behave in a way that's the way the world sees things, Or if you want to lift yourself up above the world and not kneel and not bow to anything that is not directly Avodas Hashem, you're totally unmoved and unimpressed and unaffected by anything. All the rules of nature and all the, this is how the world does things and this is the way you're supposed to do it and all that has no place, means nothing to you because you're totally above it. That's completely your choice. There are no outside factors to sabotage that choice. In earlier generations, there were outside factors that made that choice. Even if you wanted to make that choice, you still had to deal with certain outside factors that made it far more difficult. In our generation, there are no outside factors that are in any way inhibiting a Jew's power of choice to choose to live a life which is totally, exclusively Avodas Hashem, and without any, without the slightest kneeling or bowing to any other Indian which is outside of Avodas Hashem.
Where are some of these things which existed in earlier generations that, what are some of the factors that would have caused earlier generations to have not been able to resist this that we can now resist? Can you give me an example of something?
Yeah, an example is that there were countries where there were certain laws and rules that were decrees that didn't allow a Jew to live his life the way he wanted to.
I mean, there are places now also where it's... Syria or...
Natural. Syria has full religious freedom. They don't have freedom to leave. And even that, they're almost... Most of the last groups just went in the last few years. Right after they came to the Rebbe for Bracha, and about a year later, almost all the Jews left one after.
Let me tell you, this Friday I went to Aspen Soim.
Yeah.
I went into an electric store in New York City, whatever, usual route. A young boy came. My eyes was unusual, but suddenly it was not obvious for me that he's a Yid, and I asked again, again, and again. Came out from Syria 3 months ago, and he talked once to put tefillin, and he knew how to light tefillin.
Sure, they bring them tefillin, they're allowed to bring them everything. Just not send any money to Eretz Israel or to America, they're not allowed to leave. The few that are left, but they're almost all gone. It's very small.
They had been released and came out 3 months ago.
But they're able to learn, they're able to down, they're able to live their lives as Jews.
That's a miracle.
I met a guy.
And even that, I mean, you're talking about mamash hands full of, I mean, you're talking about a maximum few hundred people. Out of 15 million Jews. I mean, there's still some residual, handful of cases, but they're saying for the most part, as a rule, for 99.something% of the 15 million Jews that exist today, there are no.
How about, let me be a little provocative, how about the fact that the double taxation makes it very challenging for a lot of people here in the U.S. to educate their kids in a Jewish fashion?
Well, not to the most time, again, the evidence say there are no challenges. The challenges are the evidence is there's a whole world without Hagis Elam and Chukia Medina. There are those things. There's a whole world with all kinds of customs and behaviors and rules and things that you have to follow. The evidence not saying that there are no rules. The evidence there is no direct, and that is where you have to make the choice. The choice is, do I feel like I'm bound by these rules and therefore I'm limited in how Jewishly I conduct my other affairs outside of the direct area of Torah mitzvahs. What the Rebbe says, but the Rebbe says the things that existed in early generations, which were openly hostile decrees, or simply did not allow a Jew the freedom of movement to do and be and go, those things have been removed. But of course, that's the whole challenge here. To rise up above Hanhagas Eilam and Chukia Medina, not to be bound by those things. Of course, there's a whole world that's challenging. It's not a world that's opposing, it's fighting you.
I met a guy, he just graduated from an appliance repair school. And he says to me that he can't find work because they all require, all the big companies, or all the companies basically, require him to work on Shabbos. So how would such a guy, you know, Makabel the Sifa?
Well, again, such a guy, if he looks at his personal life as something separate from his Avodah Hashem, so he's stuck. I mean, he has to make his decisions based on.
Based on
what the what the employers say and what the situation is. If on the other hand, he recognizes that everything that he does is only Avodah Hashem, so then he finds out a way to run the business for himself and to use that to serve Hashem, not to be impressed by the fact that it's hard and it's difficult and it's challenging. If his work is also nothing more than Avodah Hashem, so he creates an opportunity for himself. There are plenty of opportunities for plans of payment who are independent. It's just a lot harder. He doesn't have the job security. He doesn't have the... So when a person is worried about concerns like job security and then what's... Those are... That means he's allowing himself to be pressured by the rules of nature, the order of nature.
It shouldn't be a lot harder, really. It should just be...
Right, the truth is it's not harder in actual practice. Actual practice, an independent appliance repairman is not doing harder work. It's just he has... He's just stepping out of the... he's stepping out on his own. And it's a feeling for him. It's difficult psychologically because he feels... there's a great amount of risk involved, and who knows if he'll get work, and who knows if he'll be able to survive, and who knows if he'll... So it's his own fears which stand in his way of going out on his own and just doing everything to thoroughly. That's...
The way I'm seeing this is though the Rebbe is saying that, in a sense, you can be above the world, in the world. It's a...
My father went to university.
Yeah.
In which the only time they gave the master's exam was on Shabbos. My father was entering the master's program. There was a from year that was leaving the master's program, and he was stuck because they would only give him his exam on Shabbos. So my father started fighting for the guy, that he should be able to take his master's, they should make a separate exam for him. This is the 50s. The 50s and the 60s. This is not after all the... equality laws. This is before civil rights, before anything. And my father fought it all the way up to the whole hierarchy of the college and the university, until they finally agreed that they'll make for this guy a separate test on Sunday. Meanwhile, the guy not being sure that my father was going to succeed in his crusade on his behalf, the guy said... The guy had meanwhile made an arrangement with another college where he would just take a few hours of coursework and they would let him take their master's exam. So he already had made another arrangement. So when my father came back to the dean said, listen to me. So you're trying to set a precedent here. Okay, they finally agreed to make a Sunday test. If no one takes it, then the next time when your turn comes around, then you're going to fight for it again. You're going to have less of a chance of winning because they gave it and no one took it. So he said to my father, you take it. My father didn't do the program yet, the two-year program. He didn't do the program yet. You take the final master's exam. That's exactly what he did. So that's what he told him. He has to do. That's it if you want to. So he did. He sat for a couple of weeks. Him and my mother, he had piles of books, and she would read from books into tape recorders, and he would listen to it. And he went through and he took an exam on 2 years, and he did very well. And he did his master's exam on 2 years worth of material, 2 years master's, not like today your master's program, this is like 37 years ago master's program. Okay, 2 years worth of material, he took the test on it and he passed with flying colors. So there's an example, I mean, again, there are a lot of people have situations in their life, not necessarily everything in their life is there. But here's an example where totally, according to all, you'd follow the rules, if you buckle to the system, so that's it. So you find a different, major, you find a different thing, you find that, you have to, make adjustments in order to have other relatives who were forced to take a final exam on, after on Yom Kippur. They wanted, I was been assigned. They were from, they were Shemesh, Shabbos, Shemesh, everything, the whole lot. But that was it. They came out in the 30s or 40s. They came out in the 30s from a pharmacy school, and that was it. You had to take the exam on Yom Kippur. That was when the exam was offered. They had no choice. So they were, so they, again, the personal shame, the shame, everything, you know, fasted, I think, just, the only thing they did was write. They walked to the place, I mean, he didn't drive, he didn't, but that was it. The one thing he gave in on was, because, keep it here, so that the Rebbe is not even talking about, giving in on Torah mitzvahs. So, but even someone who doesn't give in on Torah mitzvahs, but there's still many ways that you have to give in, because there's certain way adjustments you have to make in your life, if the, I'm not giving the example, my father's example, as someone who's driving forces of Avodas Hashem. I'm just saying a situation where if you didn't, we're not reckoning with the normal limitations of things, you're able to have a success which, and Elisa, my father always says that it saved him from a lot of, it saved him from a lot of tzaras, because he was able to, knowing that he had the math, the exam under his belt, he was able to adjust the schedule and not have to sit in as many classes. He was able to avoid certain unpleasant situations which came up in classes by having more the luxury of not having to attend so much, because he knew that he had I'm just giving that as an example. I mean, there's people, there's a lot of, you know, everybody has situations in their life where, you know, where they take the path of least resistance. I mean, and that's called giving in. When, you know, when you take the path of least resistance, it means living your life, but, you know, the way the world says to live your life. When you take the high road is, you know, it seems hard at first. You have to break through that initial resistance. Once you take the high road, so
how does that differ from the stories that I've heard about the previous generation, where people had to, we're told to work on Shabbos or they'd be fired, and so you hear all these stories about people who were fired every Sunday and had to find a new job.
In the discuss of those people who did not give in. So today we live in a world in which the universal day off is right.
But what is the difference between their challenges and our challenges? You were saying
their challenges were in Torah mitzvahs. The actual observance of Torah mitzvahs. The actual observance of Torah mitzvahs, they're saying, is non-negotiable. That's not a challenge. The same guy, okay, he was in the serious knowledge of Torah mitzvahs. But he went home and enjoyed his steak, and he went to the ball game, and, you know, he lived life like, you know, you gotta live, right? He followed the normal, that same guy, when it came to his personal life, to his divrei harashos, might have, in many ways, lived his life based on worldly standards of how you live your life. Our challenge is not on Torah mitzvahs. Torah mitzvahs is not a problem for us. Okay? Torah mitzvahs, unless you make it one, but Torah mitzvahs is not a problem for us. We can learn Torah and do mitzvahs in relative ease and comfort. The challenge that we have is in Divrei Rishus, is in Yoni Chel, And the special character that we have is that we could transcend those in Yanam too.
I know.
We totally, that all our Yanam should totally be Torah.
I can see what you're saying for the most part, but I still know people even now who occasionally have challenges in terms of Torah and mitzvahs.
I'm not telling you not. The Rebbe is just saying that as a rule, the world as it's set up today, okay? The world as it's set up today, those extraneous challenges, those extraneous forces of opposition are for the most part non-existent. And it's now completely up to the free choice of a person how he chooses to live his life. That, by the way, a lot of people have outside challenges because they put themselves into those outside challenges. Okay? I mean, here you're talking about a guy who took a course which in order to get a job, you have to work on Shabbos. There's a lot of other employment opportunities, right? A person who looked at his employment as nothing more than Avodas Hashem would not take such a course.
Or the guy might not have realized at the beginning that
okay, was okay. So I'm saying even a person who at the beginning, or maybe he wasn't from when he started, or
maybe got a
boy didn't realize when he started, whatever it is, even such a person, if he's looking for an opportunity, for a way to serve Hashem with his appliance,
did he get a bracha?
Maybe the Rebbe told him to go. I don't know. But I see what you're saying.
What those who
But usually a store where they get a lot more business in Shabbos than the other day. And the barely making it.
What? A store that gets a lot more business on Shabbos than any other day and they're barely making it?
Yeah.
But the challenge is that, for that person, the challenge is not the Shabbos. I mean, that's not the challenge thought. There's no outside force that's forcing a person to do anything. No guy standing with a gun over his head and saying, you better work on Shabbos. There's stamina on the sign like any other sign. That's not the issue. The Rebbe's not talking about that we're living in a world without Nisyanis. Of course, not Nisyanis. Of course, not challenges. And the challenges of Torah Mitzvahs are not even negotiable. It's not the question. The question is that the Rebbe's saying that we're living in a world where if we choose to, it's up to you. You have to choose it. If you choose to, you can lift yourself up above not only the difficulty, the challenges that the world puts in your way, when I gave the Torah Mitzvahs, and the world does still put challenges in your way. It's not the question. That in addition to be able to rising up to the challenges that you have when I gave the Torah Mitzvahs, today, if you choose to, you can rise up above any challenges which in the Anirishas present. And do all of those things, and incorporate all of those things completely and totally into Avodas Hashem, and not in any way kneel or bow or show any subservience to any other matters except Avodas Hashem.
I heard that people looking for the temptation problem were fired because they refused to work in Shabbos recently. I think that happened.
I'm sorry, what?
I think that recently there was a Jews who were working for the sanitation department who were fired because they refused to work on Shabbos.
I don't know of any such... according to the federal law, that can't be done.
What?
According to federal law, it's illegal to fire somebody for religious observance.
Oh, I mean, they would mean the worship fire.
I'm sorry, what?
We're
violating
federal law.
It's hard to believe that the city is going to, New York is going to violate federal law.
I don't know, certainly,
plenty of organizations that work to see to it that these laws are kept and upheld. But again, my point here is not to go through every single possible scenario that might have ever happened in the world. But I was telling you, as a general rule, it's up to you. The key lesson of the sikha is not if anyone ever did will might get fired. Again, there are challenges to Torah Mitzvahs, no question about it. What we're saying is that there are no extraneous forces here in direct opposition, making it directly impossible for a Jew to conduct his life according to the way he sees fit. Of course, conducting your life the way you see fit is challenging. And some of those challenges might be having to do with what jobs you can hold and what jobs you can't hold, what situations you can be in, what situations you can't be in. But the point is, the point of the sikha is that if a Jew chooses, he can live a life that is pure holiness, morning, afternoon, night, every endeavor, every activity, every move he makes can be governed by God's will and holiness and not in any way governed by what the world has to say.
Testing.
Okay. Apiza that when Eich Fashtainim Eichtu from Yehuda, Ayigash Elav Yehuda Lagabi Yesif. Based on all of the above, we'll also understand what is greater about Yehuda in relation to Yosef. Page 222, as mentioned. Afalpi vas Yosef HaTzadik is given the shalat al oretz. Even though Joseph the righteous was the ruler over the land, was thus bavais if dem via id is a balabais if der welt un if umas ha'ilim harum em, which indicates that a Jew is the balabais, the homeowner, not a good word in English, but the ruler, so to speak. Over the world and over the nations of the world around him is Aleph. There is Dertzu Bashtim Givar and Duchparoi Melech Mitzrayim Dos Heist as does is verbunden mit Xeris Hamelech Vechuke Hamadina. So first of all, one limitation in his rulership is the fact that he was an appointee. Okay, he had not established his own rulership, but in fact he was an appointee of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, which means that his rulership was bound by the decree of the king and the rules of the country. Beis be'efen az la'achri aminui is rak hakisei egdal mimeka. And even the appointment was done in such a way that there was a certain limitation in terms of his power, as Pari said, only the throne shall be greater than you. In other words, that you cannot attain the actual throne. The throne is reserved for Pharaoh. Which indicates that Yosef is still bound, even albeit in a somewhat subtle way, but he's still bound by the limitations of the world and of Egypt. Okay. Is bestanden in them as er ist zugegangen zu Yosef in Beli Kabbalas Rishus Tchila Kanal, whereas the force, the power, the strength of Yehuda's approaching Yosef, okay, is expressed in the fact that he approached Yosef without asking permission first, as mentioned earlier, and he impacted on him as v'layach Yosef lis apigein. That Yosef could no longer contain himself, and therefore he revealed himself to his brothers. Was das beweist, if I take if was rechnet sich nit mit der Anhagis Hamedina um Anhagis Shel Elam Chu. Which this indicates such a strength that does not take into reckoning at all the normal conduct of the country and the normal behaviors, the normal manners of the world. And he points out in footnote 59, will be Pratius Yesh Leimar. More specifically, we could say, She'etzel Yehuda haysa maila gam legabi Mordechai. That by Yehuda there was a maila even relative to Mordechai. Ki achashverash mina es Mordechai lias yeyetze, v'achakach mishne lemelech. Because Achashverash did appoint Mordechai first to be an advisor, and then later to be second to the king. Whereas Yehuda's approaching Yosef was an expression of his own force and his own personal strength, without any permission from Yosef. And in this detail, Mordechai, even though we in the Sikha we're making the distinction that Mordechai is more like the one who does not reckon with the laws of the king, and that's why even when the other minister said, why are you transgressing the laws of the king? So even though generally we're comparing Mordechai's approach to Yehuda's, but at the same time, on a certain level, in this particular detail, in terms of his actual role in the kingdom, he was actually an appointee of Achashverosh, and therefore in this particular detail, similar to Yosef rather than Yehuda. Back inside in the text, das heißt, Achibur von zwei Hafrim, Kirzein, Ish, Va'ish. Here is where we see a fusion of two opposites in the conduct of Yehuda. Zusammen damit, was Yehuda hat gewusst, als darf ankommen zu Yosef, bechteet zu befreien Binyamin, bis als Yehuda sagt, im Kamecha Kapari. On one level, together with the fact that Yehuda knows that he needs to come on to Yosef in order to free Binyamin. Biz as Yehuda zaktim kamecha ke pare, till to the point that Yehuda says to him that you are equal to pare. Was the farat der Yosef bekeft zu bemaal zijn mekoshes Yehuda. Und neich has de mitte Yehuda schelig ben as Yosef zon abschicken zu pare mit der teina as akise egdom imak. Therefore Yosef has the power to fulfill Yehuda's request. And also Yehuda thought that Yosef would not be able to send him off to Pari and say, don't ask me, ask Pari, because the throne is above me. So that's why he says that you are equal to Pari. How does he fit? At the same time that he knew he needs to come on to Yosef. So he has to operate within the rules of the world, of nature. hat er sich geführt und der ganze Breitkeit, Kilo, wie er darf nicht ankommen zu Jesu. But he acted, he conducted himself with complete, without holding anything back, with complete Breitkeit, as if he doesn't have to come on to Jesu. Und bei Yigash Elov Yehuda, without taking school. And he approached him with the greatest force without taking into consideration that normally you have to ask permission and so on and so forth. And he approached him, he basically let him know that I need you, but I don't need you.
How do we resolve the initial question that we had a couple of pages earlier, that the mitas anyanim, that there was nothing, you know, that Yosef was really not opposed to Yehuda, so therefore Yehuda's actions weren't really forceful in a sense, they weren't really showing strength because he was on the same side. How do we resolve that?
So he resolved that. If you look back to so he explained that that this action of Yehuda showed that he wasn't bound by the normal limitations of ultimately, what he's been going all along with till now is showing how Yehuda's action, Yosef was on the surface, Yosef appears to be the ruler, Yosef appears to have all the power, Yosef, even after the fact, turns out that Yosef is the ruler, Yosef has all the power. The key point of what Yehuda did here is not so much that what he actually broke through, that there was any real opposition. That's not the point. The point was that he set himself above the limitations of nature. And because he did that, that's why Yehuda is the one that Yaakov sends in order to pave the way for settling into Eretz Mitzrayim in a way that you're not bound by Mitzrayim, but rather could rise up above it. So that's the key to what Yehuda did. Yosef, all his ruling and all his power and all his everything that was bequeathed him within the natural order of things by sparing Eretz Mitzrayim. Yehuda's standing up to Yosef, even if it wasn't necessary, is the key ingredient of what he contributes, is the ability to stand up to break the rules.
Is it to break the rules? The reading I got was that he was acting as a melech, in that he fundamentally is the source of the rules, as opposed to it having been appointed from somebody else and being responsible to someone else.
So again, the Rebbe says that he's breaking the rules. What ends up happening is when you break the rules, ultimately you have the power to rewrite the rules. When someone is not bound by the rules of nature and the rules of, but ultimately, even if he writes the rules, it doesn't necessarily go through him. I mean, Yosef was still the ruler. The actual ruler is still Yosef. But Yosef ends up doing what Yehuda wants, which is freeing Binyamin. That's what ended up happening. Because, but again, after by Yehuda breaking those rules, that brings about that not reckoning with
I thought we learned that wasn't what the Indian was, because after all, that's really what Yosef wanted also. But the significant point was that Yehuda acted on his own in the way in which a king would act.
Nowhere that he makes the point that he acted in the way in which a king would act. That's your own point.
But it seems from the way you're saying it that
he always keeps emphasizing the not reckoning with the normal limitations of things. Is when you don't reckon with the normal limitations imposed by nature, then he adds that not only are you able to transcend those limitations, but you can actually impact on those same rules and regulations and rewrite them, so to speak. But again, that's your own.
Wasn't the whole question that even though Yehuda acted as such a taikif, and he disregarded the whole establishment, but the problem was that Lufi Amitis and Yonim.
That's what we explained. There was two things. One, first he showed that Yehuda's position shows greater strength than Yosef. Then the question raised was, but Lamaisa, his strength was not needed. So he answered, no, the unique contribution, what Yehuda contributed to the equation was the ability to transcend the rules and regulations. And that is something that you need to pay homage in order to survive in Mitzrayim. And that's why B'Peil Mamish, Yaakov sends Yehuda L'Heiris L'Fanav Gershon. And Rashi says to set up the one of Shatan and Rashi is to set up the city to, and the question is, you have Yosef on the spot. What do you need to send Yehuda for?
What
the answer is, because in actuality, in Peil Mamish, the Keach to survive Mitzrayim comes from the ability to transcend the rules and regulations, and not the power that one is granted within the rules and regulations.
What was his assumption before that?
Initially he introduced that the question raises the Yigashel Yehuda shows that Yehuda has to come out to Yosef. And to that he answered, no, it shows that Yehuda couldn't care less what Yosef has to say. And he does what he wants.
Right,
then the question was, okay, what's a lot? But that's not actually what the deciding factor in the situation of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, because the bottom line is that Yosef is the one that decides. It was through Yosef that everything that happened in Mitzrayim. So then he answers, no. That Yehuda Shalach Lefanav L'Heres Lefanav Geshna, Yehuda Shalach L'Heres Lefanav Geshna, that Fakir, Dafka, the establishment of Yehuda Mitzrayim, Dafka comes from Kerech Yehuda. Even though on the surface, it's the one who's writing the rules and regulations, the one who's actually giving them the gift of the land and so on, is Yosef. But the Kerech to do that, the Kerech for them to be able to settle into Mitzrayim and rise up and transcend the limitations of Mitzrayim, that comes from Yehuda's behavior, which is transcends all the rules and limitations of the natural order.
So the grasp of the Jewish people
is a product of Yehuda's behavior.
So he
went through step by step.
What did he really reject? What did Yehuda transcend? And if nothing was really truly ever against him, that's my question. I mean, you didn't really answer that question.
The rules are. The actual rule is, it doesn't matter, putting this in Yanim, that once it turns out that it was Yosef and Yosef because his brother wouldn't kill him anyway. The rules are that if you approach the rule of the land of Egypt, there's a certain protocol that you have to keep. And he broke those rules. That's it. He broke the rules. He broke the protocol. And he said, I couldn't kill us. And I'll take you all on. And all the teeth fell out. And all the, I mean, he didn't just, you know, he stood up to an entire nation, an entire army, with a... He stood up to them. That was the point. The point was whether if something was going to happen to them anyway, that wasn't the issue. Here the issue, the particular point is not so much what Yehuda accomplished as in terms of the position that Yehuda took, which is the river's dafkil achiv ayigashel Yehuda to makom